Okay, James, we are coming to you. Actually, we're coming to them from your basement. It's a basement edition of the Leaf Report podcast. What's up?
It's a good thing we don't do video versions of this. This is like the Wayne's World edition of the podcast. We're next to my Nine Inch Nails poster and a bunch of baby toys. And here, I got this. This guy can be part of the podcast.
All right, that's not it. Looks good. Like a green, looks like
it's
the
a
Grinch.
Dancing Christmas tree. It's okay. Yeah, my 4-year-old got it at Christmas.
All right, well, we are brought to you by The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/Leaf Report and by the Soccer Hall of Fame. So we should start. We got a few things to talk about. We will talk about John Tavares going back to Long Island for the first time. We will talk about the Edmonton Oilers and the Leafs, and we're going to kind of go into what the Oilers can learn from how the Leafs kind of rebuilt their organization. But we have to start with the trade deadline, which wasn't really that interesting.
Trade deadline day.
That's a good one,
actually. Best part about trade deadline was that me tradey guy that TSN had, that mascot.
That actually was pretty good. I agree. It was funny.
You see O-Dog tackle him?
Yeah.
And they had to pixelate O-Dog?
Yes.
Did you see during the game against Buffalo that there was a shot of O-Dog that randomly showed up in the...
That was amazing. His reaction was just, like, perfect.
Did you hear why that happened?
No, it must just have been a mistake in, like, their control room where they accidentally pressed that feed.
But why would they have an O-Dog... I guess for the intermissions, he was, like, waiting for... Yeah.
And they probably just pressed that button.
And maybe it was like... Maybe they got excited in the control room and they hit the button.
The best would have been, like, if Jeff just had, like, his feet up on the desk, was just, like, or sleeping or, like, doing... Just... They're fortunate that he was just, like, engrossed in the game.
Have you done one of those, like, shows? You've done it for radio, but have you done it for TV where you're, like, sitting and waiting and...
No, you've done more TV stuff than me.
Yeah, not like that, though, but...
Anyway.
I think there's a lot of downtime. Like, you're basically sitting around for hours, especially on trade deadline day. That's a long day when you got to cover trade deadline all day and then there's a game at night. I was pretty waxed yesterday.
Well, and there wasn't really anything happening, like, during the day. Like, it seemed like everything kind of happened...
Right at 3 o'clock.
Yeah. So, one of those things was the Leafs picking up Nick Batan. But, like, basically, they kind of lived up to the expectation that we had, which was that they had made their move for Jake Muzzin. They weren't tough to do anything else. Did that surprise you, or is that... Like I said, just exactly what you thought would happen.
I was surprised they did anything. I didn't think they were going to do anything at all. And the idea that they were going to move Lindholm wasn't on anyone's radar at all. So in hindsight, it's not that surprising. I just didn't know that another team would be interested in him.
He's an NHL player, like fringy NHL player. But I think what was most interesting to me, like with what Kyle Dubas said afterward, is he mentioned the contractual status, and he mentioned that Batan, you know, is under control, whereas Lindholm is going to be a UFA. I think it was a really interesting play that way, in that you basically took an asset that was going to be nothing. You were going to probably let go, or you could have re-signed, who's like going to be 27, I think, next year, for something younger that's under control, that has skill, that's a former second round pick, that has really good junior numbers. Like, it's the kind of thing that you see in other sports that we don't typically see in hockey all that much, and I think it's interesting that way.
Well, that's true. They're trying to win the cup this year, so I don't think they make that move if they feel like it hurts their roster right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that Kyle Dubas believes Trevor Moore is better than Lindholm and would rather see Trevor Moore in the lineup than Lindholm. And
sure,
one of the ways that was going to happen is not having Lindholm around anymore.
Hmm.
Right? Like, I the way he rationalized it makes sense. Like, Patan can be a guy that's in the organization for a few years, and I don't know if they're going to be able to re-sign Lindholm. I don't even know if he's going to be in the NHL next year, but...
Yeah.
I think they were looking at, I mean, didn't he have like 1 point in his last 17 games or something like that? And then every time Trevor Moore has been in the lineup on that fourth line, they've created something. And even Ennis has looked really good. And the GOAT all of a sudden is an all-star.
To me, that's like the other part of this. I think the Trevor Moore part's really a good point, because like he clearly should be on their team. Like, we talked about this on the podcast last week, that their team is better with him in it. But like if Frédéric Gauthier hasn't made himself into a fourth line center who can be okay. This doesn't happen because, like, they don't have another center who can play in that position. That was going to be Lindholm. I think that's, like, fascinating that because I was not in the train that Frederik Gauthier was going to be an NHL player.
Well, he was bad last year. Don't you remember? Like, remember last year? I remember last year, last December, writing that their fourth line was a big problem and Gauthier was a big part of the problem. And they sent him down, like, the next day or 2 days later, and we didn't see him again. And it just kind of felt like that was it for him. Like, it didn't feel like he was going to get another chance. And I think, I mean, the thing we missed is he had that major, major injury the year before last season. And then he says it really set him back. Like, he wasn't able to train. He wasn't able to work on his skating. He wasn't able to get faster. And, you know, the time that he's put in, he put in all of last year with the Marlies and playing on that championship team and everything, it looks like it's paid off for him. And, I mean, he's never probably going to be a guy that's going to play more than 10 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. But you're right. He made Lindholm expendable, and we were calling the, or you said that they had hobbits on the line now because they got
Trevor
Moore's what, 5'8"? Patan's,
they're all 5'9". Really small. Tyler Ennis is really small. Like, they're like my size, yeah, maybe smaller.
So they got the three hobbits, and Gauthier is Gandalf, or he's one of the Ents. He's like one of the tree guys. how big are you into the Lord of the Rings?
I actually really like the Lord of the Rings, so I know exactly what you're talking about. It's kind of like, or maybe Merry and Pippin are really small. Who's the guy who's a little bit bigger than those two guys who kind of goes with them? The tree? Anyway, whatever.
The tree's the Ent, but he's not a little bit bigger. He's huge.
Okay. Well, no. Oh, and the tree carries them.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's not go down that hole.
I don't know who the eagle would be, but we'll figure it out.
But so, is there anything else you want to talk more about that trade? Or Gauthier?
Is Gary Bettman Sauron?
Or is he Saruman? I always got those two confused.
Well, Saruman's the bad wizard.
They're both bad. Sauron's bad, too.
Yeah, but Sauron's not a wizard.
Jesus, you're way deeper into this than me. Any more Patan, Gauthier?
I think Patan can be something. Like, you were kind of poo-pooing the trade, but it's like if you can trade, like, a fringe... No,
that's not fair. My reaction was, this doesn't do anything.
Your tweet
for
was
there.
Patan sucks or something like that. No, it wasn't. I'm just kidding. I'm just being stupid.
Yes.
I'm being stupider than normal.
Yes.
I think Patan could potentially be something.
You know, I think it's a smart play. Like, there's
Dubas
no downside.
Finding these reclamation projects. The only thing that I was curious about is how long they've had their eye on Nick Patan, because he's been wasting away in Winnipeg. Like, he hasn't played in a long time. And the other thing that I'm curious about is, and people in the press box were talking about this, I had some other reporters asked me, they're like, is Babcock going to play this guy?
Yeah. Well, like, basically, Patan went through the exact same thing.
He got
as Josh Levoed.
Levoed hauled.
And this is like, he's coming to the place where that happens all the time. Hall.
If Dubas accumulates enough guys like that, then he's going to have to play some of them. Is that what's happening?
Not necessarily. Justin Hall's been scratched 60 times.
Well, Gardner's hurt now. If they have another D injury, then I guess, like, and Dubas
step right up.
Dubas
actually
doesn't
no.
recall someone else.
They'll recall Marincin. No, I would bet on it.
Right.
Hasn't played since December.
Well, I mean, why more mean the forwards? Like, if there's a forward injury right now, then Patan's going to go into the lineup.
I bet they'll work him in. The most interesting thing to me would be, and I don't think this is going to happen because Gauthier has been fine, would be if they, like, went to an ultra-small, super-skilled fourth line of, like, Patan, Moore, Ennis.
Well, that's what Dubas did with Sault Ste. Marie, right? He was, like, the only team that did that, and people said you can't win that way. And, you know, this is history repeating itself because this happened in the OHL, and it's... I don't know. There's all the talk leading into the deadline. The Leafs need a heavy forward, and are the Leafs tough enough? And I don't think Dubas believes in any of that stuff. I mean, that just doesn't fit. Like, it's not like that they don't like tough players. I was saying this to... I was talking... You know that 67 Sound, the guy on Twitter? Mm-hmm. I was talking to him on DM or whatever, and I was like, people think that analytics people don't like tough players. It's like, no, like, they just like tough players that have good analytics. Like, Jake Muzzin's a tough player. Mm-hmm. He was very good. Good underlying numbers, but they don't like, you know, tough players that are just tough and not good. Like, there's no point. They don't like Fraser McLaren and a whole bunch of all the guys that the Leafs had a few years ago. Like, it's and the other thing too is that toughness is often something that's really overvalued in the NHL and is more expensive than the benefits that you get from acquiring it.
Well, and like, it's not like you acquire one, let's use the name Wayne Simmons. Like, suddenly you acquire Wayne Simmons and it's like, oh my God, they're a tough team. That's not who they are. Like, that's not good. You wrote a story about this a few weeks ago. That's not it. Like, they're a skilled team. They're a fast, skilled team.
They can't change what they are.
Nor should they. Why are you going to change?
Well, because people are saying that you can't win in the playoffs that way and you can't beat Boston. And I mean, the chances they're going to play Boston right now look very high. There's a huge gap now with Montreal that's opened up. Mm-hmm. The Leafs are 7 points up on Montreal. The Bruins are 8, and the Bruins are playing San Jose tonight and could move even more than that. I would say it's 98% chance it's Leafs-Bruins in the first round. Like, we should just book our hotels.
I was actually thinking that this morning. We should.
Apparently, the hotel situation is not good.
It wasn't good last year. We stayed in Airbnb. Remember that?
Yeah, you hated it. That was not a nice place. We need to up our Airbnb game. The Athletics got to fork out a bit more money for that.
So one of the implications of them not doing anything further is that their defense is going to be the same. Unless something changes and, you know, Mike Babcock is convinced to play Morgan Riley on the right, or Jake Muzzin is convinced to play the right, or whatever. I still think that's a big flashing light.
I was looking at it today. Yeah, it was this morning. I was looking at it. The Riley-Hainsey pairings numbers in the Boston series last year.
I believe it was like 40%.
It was horrific.
Yeah.
It was really, really bad. They can't do that again. They can't do it again.
The problem is, like, all signs point to them.
Not just that, but the penalty kill was also brutal against the Bruins in that series.
Yeah.
I'm going to write about this at some point. There's probably, like, some bloggers and stuff that are listening to this. They're going to write about it before I get a chance to. But I was planning on writing about it soon, like, just looking back at that series. And we were talking about this at the rink today. I think I was talking about it with you. You or someone else. Just, like, they didn't lose against the Bruins because they weren't tough enough. They lost because, like, the penalty kill was bad, and they lost for a number of reasons that weren't, it didn't have anything to do with being tough.
You mean they didn't need more heaviness?
No, like, if they had Wayne Simmons on that team last year, do you think they would win that series? Because he, like,
do you want to know the ranking of the reasons they lost? It was me we were talking to about this. The reasons they lost were Kadri was suspended for 3 games. They were playing Thomas Plekanec.
Well, the first 2 games.
Thomas Plekanec isn't in the league anymore. He was playing like 16 minutes a game. Frederik Andersen wasn't great. Auston Matthews scored 1 goal. Their penalty kill wasn't good, and their top pair got filled in by the Bruins top line. That's why they lost the series. But anyway, that's a playoff preview show that we'll talk about that stuff. But
yeah, I think that was supposed to be the podcast in a couple weeks, and I totally screwed it up.
So. It's okay. But so, like, if you're Kyle Dubas, you've added Jake Muzzin, I think, with the intent of trying to improve that top pair. That's not happened. What do you do? Like, do you just
let this play out? The GM, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
And you don't, like, this was your time to be able to do something. He took Lindholm away, but he didn't opt to take Hainsey or Zaitsev away.
The problem is, like, it's going to be an issue. Like, it just, at some point, will be an issue, and you wonder what the implications are from that. I just don't understand why they haven't tried more with Muzzin and Riley. Like, I don't know what you're waiting for. Like, there's 20 games left in the season. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They tried it for 6.5 games and then punted it. Like, it doesn't totally make sense.
What's interesting, and I wonder if Babcock looks at this, is that Hainsey's plus minus is ridiculously high. Do you think that that's a factor for the coaching staff? And they're like, We're outscoring the opposition by a huge degree when Hainsey's on the ice.
Well, I know I did a story when I was at CP on plus minus, and I actually talked to Babcock outside the scrum about it, and he said that is one of the things that he considers, but he also looks at scoring chances, and, like, he looks at all those underlying numbers. But I to me, it's like he just trusts Hainsey more, and he's been pretty vocal that he doesn't think Riley should be on his offside. The problem, and you and I were discussing this in the press box the other night, is it so worth it to them to have Riley's offense, if that's even the case,
right,
versus, like, the deficiency of having Hainsey there as well? Like, it doesn't compute for me.
Well, no. I mean, like, the question is, how much worse is Riley's offense, and right, does that outweigh having a better player out there with him? The question, too, is the tough minutes. Like, it was remarkable to me how good Hainsey looked playing with Dermott on third pair minutes and getting offensive zone starts, and he like he looked really good. And I think if he's against slower, less threatening players, he's fine. Like he's an NHL defenseman. He should be playing in the league.
Yeah.
The concern is, we've talked about this on other podcasts, so I don't want to repeat. The concern is that the Bruins have one really good line, and you're going to be throwing Hainsey out there in a hard match situation in D zone starts, and they're going to get hemmed in their own zone again.
Well, I think we can say with certainty that they would have looked to upgrade that position again. Let's go into like why it would have been difficult. I think it's like for a number of reasons, which we've touched on occasionally. But some of the problems were that they need dollar in, dollar out. There's not a ton out there. And cost. Is there anything else that comes to mind for you, or are those kind of the things?
I think cost is a big one because they could have gotten a defenseman, but other teams wanted, like, they wanted either a really good prospect or a player off the roster, and I don't think either of those things make sense. Like they could have got Brett Pesce, but, like, you can't trade Kapanen with the way he's playing. You can't trade Andreas Johnsson with the way he's playing. You can't. Like, that doesn't make you better. Like, bringing in Pesce, it's the same thing we talked about with Riley. Pesci's going to be an upgrade over Hainsey, let's say. Let's say that that's true. It is true. But, like, to what extent? And if you subtract a really good winger from your team who's playing with, you know, your best centerman and it has been really dangerous offensively, it's not, like, you're not getting that benefit. So,
yeah. It's like Larson and Hall to a lesser degree. It's like yes, you've improved your defense, but like you've made your forward group weaker lot weaker.
We're going to get to the Oilers later. Perhaps soon.
Perhaps now. Perfect segue.
Yeah, there we go.
But let's take a second to mention The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/leafreport.
The Athletic has big things planned for podcasts, including ours, so we're really excited about it. Thank you to the people that have supported us and used our promo code to sign up to The Athletic, or that some people have given us some money on Patreon over the last year. We're going to get better equipment. We're going to have guests on the show. We're going to record every single game during the playoffs. We'll do a podcast probably the next morning, right? That's what we'll do. So the podcast, I mean, it's grown a lot, and it's thanks to people like really supporting it. So if you're not signed up for The Athletic, I hope you give us a shot for the stretch drive in the playoffs. It's only, was it $39 or something like that? Theathletic.com/leafreport. Sign up and
you don't have to just like Leafs. If you like, but chances if you're listening to this podcast, you like Leafs, but there's tons of spring trainings started. So there's so much good baseball stuff. Ken Rosenthal seems to write like 50 times a week. It's insane. And everything is like, everything is really good. I don't understand how he does it.
He's like one of the best people in the world. Like,
yes.
I've talked to him a couple times and like, what a nice guy. Like he's been such, we got him pretty early on in The Athletic's evolution. Like we weren't a very big company. Did he start before you did?
I think right around the same time.
Maybe a little bit later, yeah. Oh, yeah, I think he started like when it was World Series time. Yeah, and you started in September and he started like closer to October maybe.
Yeah, and I was a big fan as a big baseball fan.
But he DM'd me, I can't remember what it was, I think it was about some Blue Jays thing or something. And it's just, you know, just like a wonderful teammate. Here's a guy who's like one of the icons in the industry and doesn't need to, you know, give other people the time of day. And, you know, and he's been retweeting like people in their first year on the beat, and he's been great. So, you know, the fact that The Athletic, one of the really neat things about the company is we've brought all these really talented sports writers from all these different places. And yeah, I went on the Leafs road trip last week and I was in Denver and Vegas and Arizona, and I'm meeting all the beat writers from the other cities. And it's like this collective of all these people from all these different places. And it's pretty neat. It's been fun to be a part of this.
Okay, well, let's move on to Leafs. Leafs are going to play the Oilers on Wednesday, so there's a chance you're listening to this and that game is done. But it doesn't matter because this conversation is still relevant. You're going to write about this. People listening may go to theathletic.com and read this.
After they've subscribed.
Yes.
And listen to the podcast.
But so one of the things that you've been thinking about, and actually it's crossed my mind too. There are a lot of lessons, not just for the Oilers, but for other rebuilding teams to take from the Leafs and what they've done. what kind of comes to mind when you think of like some of the things that the team has done to get to this point where now they're challenging for a cup, whereas like 5 years ago it was a bit of a, you know what, cluster F.
Step one, identify someone who can be the kind of overarching figure and identify the problems in your organization and fix them and give them autonomy. That's what the Leafs did. And I think it's probably the first time they really did that wholeheartedly. You know, I started covering the Leafs around 07 or 08, and, you know, it was kind of messy. I mean, I guess they did turn over the keys to Brian Burke in November of 08 or 09.
But he wanted to speed it up.
Right. He took things in the wrong direction. And the difference was when Brendan Shanahan came in, and he had the benefit of seeing the wreckage of what happened with when Burke tried to speed things up. And he also had the benefit of Brendan Shanahan had a whole year to kind of evaluate what was wrong in the organization and just kind of observe and talk to people and look at everything before the big purge happened. But I think the most significant thing that happened was they identified the right person in Shanahan to come in and figure this out. That's one of the most important things, is find the right person who can fix it and give them the ability to do so.
Okay, so I'll follow up on that with something he said. And it was, I believe he said this at the end of season press conference at that the end of the 14-15 season, when they had all that crazy shit happen. They had Horacek, they fired Carlisle. And one of the things he said was, the hardest thing in Toronto is not to have a plan. He said the hardest thing is to stick to a plan. And I think if there is one big lesson to take from Brendan Shanahan's leadership, is that you have to stick to the plan. And it is hard. It's hard to stay on what you're trying to do. It's hard to be bad. It's hard to, you know, see it through when the team sucks, when you want to speed things up, when you want to, like, you see it in other markets. They kept on, like, this plan of, like, we're going to be bad. We're going to get high picks. We're going to pick the right players. We're not going to rush them. And then we're going to be good. And to me, like, that's what they did really well in a bigger picture sense.
There were a lot of people talking too when Shanahan said that it's going to take 5 years, it's going to take 6 years, they're going to go scorched earth and they're going to trade everybody. And they didn't really do that. Like, one of the things the Leafs did that worked out really well is they kept a lot of talent around. They kept Gardner and Riley, and they kept Kadri, and they didn't get rid of everything. And I think part of what happened in Edmonton is they got rid of almost everything. And then, you know, you've got, I mean, I guess they still had Nugent Hopkins. I guess they had, but...
Well, but there was a point where they looked at their team and said, we have to change this mix, was like the talk in Edmonton. Like, they have to trade somebody. And, like, that's not a thing. Like, you just need to, you need to keep your good players, and then you need to find more good players. That's how you get better.
Yeah. They kind of seem to be stuck in this, and there's been like a series of different general managers there. They just need to make sure that the next person that they bring in there doesn't make the same mistakes, because they've done it multiple times now where, you know, you're blaming Taylor Hall, or you're blaming the fact that you don't have a defenseman, or you're blaming the wrong things. You just don't have a good enough team. You need to keep accumulating talent. And the perfect example is what happened with Jordan Eberle. And like it's fine if you want to trade him, that's fine. But so they trade him to the Islanders. They get back Ryan Strome. They don't really like Ryan Strome. He's a downgrade from Eberle. And then they trade Ryan Strome for Spooner, right, to the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And they get Spooner, and they don't really like Spooner because he's worse than Strome was. So you're just I saw people on Twitter compared it to, you know, that story of the guy that started with a paperclip and kept trading up until he got a house. They're kind of doing the opposite thing where they're, you know, you start with a Jordan Eberle who's like a decent, what do we want to say, like a second line player who can produce like 50 points and whatever.
Yeah.
And you end up with, I mean, I think they're down to paperclip now, aren't they? I mean, the Spooner for a guy that was in, Sam Gagne, that was in the minors that no one really wanted at his contract. Like, that's, they're going the wrong direction.
Yeah, they just kept taking the good pieces that they had and made them worse. Do you know what's interesting, actually?
They chased toughness to it, like, is part of it too, right?
Right, they were going against the trends that were happening in the game.
Right.
But, like, what's interesting, I think this is true. You mentioned, like, that they need to get the right guy in charge. I believe they hired Bob Nicholson to be their president in the same year that the Leafs hired Brendan Shanahan. And so, like, as much as people are giving Peter Chiarelli all kinds of shit, which is fine, so, like, a lot of it's deserved.
Yeah, but
the guy at the top, like, is just as culpable, and, like, it doesn't seem like he's taking the same amount of arrows, but, like, whatever plan he had, like, it didn't work or he didn't stick to it. Like, or,
well, he should definitely be on the clock here. I mean,
it just seems like all these organizations, like, it's not just the Oilers. It's like the Senators. It's like there is no plan. And so, like, you lurch from, like, okay, we're going to do this. And then they're like, fuck, that's not working. Okay, we're going to do this. And then it's like, oh, wait.
You know what my fear would be for the Oilers? And, we're like, we're neutral on this. Like, it would be nice to see Edmonton, like, rise out of this abyss and be competitive. And I'm from Western Canada. I remember cheering for those Oilers teams when they played against the Dallas Stars every year. And they were the underdog and, like, wanting that team to win. And then my fear would be that they bring in the new GM and the mandate is we need to start winning, right? And you can't go in with that mindset if what you have is not ready to get there.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a lot of pressure on, like, there'll be pressure on Bob Nicholson for the team to turn around, right?
Yes.
So he's probably going to say to the next GM, like, we need to make the playoffs.
And then it's just, that's just a circle.
Yeah, it's a circle of the damned.
And one of the big things I think from Shanahan's time is, like, I believe he went to ownership and said, like, we're going to be bad, and got that okay. I guess that's what you need. Like, you need ownership to be on board with it. But, like, a couple other things that we should get to. One, they got lucky. You can't deny the luck in this. Like, getting Matthews is lucky. They also set themselves up to be bad.
Given the Oilers win the lottery almost every year.
Yeah.
Somehow the Leafs snuck one in there.
Right, but, like, they set themselves up to be bad, which means they had good odds to get the number one pick. They got the number one pick. They got lucky when Arizona took Dylan Strome, who's actually turned into a player now. They get Mitch Marner. But they also didn't miss on their good picks. Like, Marner is obviously a star. Matthews is a star. Nylander is going to be a star if he's not
already. Goat's going to be a star.
But, like, even, like, Gauthier is a good example of the other thing I want to mention. Don't pick those kind of players in the first round. But, like, they have developed really well. Like, even Gauthier, like, you wrote that story about the fourth line. I literally wrote a story with the headline, if Frederick Gauthier is Frederick Gauthier might not be an NHL player. And if not, like, what does that mean for the Leafs? But they stuck with this guy when I thought, like, there were lots of times they should bail. Andreas Janssen's a seventh-round pick. Kasperi Kapanen has become a player. You know, like, they've developed really well.
The Gauthier and Trevor Moore and some of these guys and Garrett Sparks and, like, some of this is the interesting. It's not very often in the NHL anymore that the assistant GM who's the GM of the AHL team.
Yeah.
Dubas was really, really invested in the Marlies. Mm-hmm. And he was really, I think under Lou, everyone was, like, a little bit siloed and everyone kind of focused on their own thing. And, you know, Hunter focused on the scouting and Dubas focused on the Marlies and development. And so Dubas did that for whatever it was, 3 years, was hyper-focused on that. I mean, when they won the Calder Cup, everyone saw him, the way that he lifted it and how much it meant to him.
Yeah.
It's very rare in the NHL that you have a young guy running the AHL team that's heavily invested in it and is, like, putting all of his time into it, and they have success, and then that AHL GM becomes the NHL GM, and then he brings players with him. It happens with coaches we see a lot, where, like, the coach, like John Cooper was with Norfolk and Syracuse too, I think, right? And he moves up to Tampa and brings some of the players with him. Yep. We see that a lot. Mike Babcock, he was with Cincinnati and then he went to Anaheim, and then he had some of those the young players that he had in Cincinnati in the AHL. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time, but we don't really see it happen with a GM. So one of the interesting things that has happened is that Kyle Dubas believes in all these guys. He believes in Justin Hall and he believes in Trevor Moore and he believes in Frederick Gauthier and who am I forgetting? Like Dermott, all these guys that he was there for in their development, he stands behind them, and it feels like he's actively rooting for these guys to succeed. And mm-hmm. he kind of has intimate knowledge of their entire development path. And Kyle Dubas knows better than most people, including you and I, if Frederick Gauthier is an NHL player, I think.
Sure.
And Trevor Moore. And, like, you look at Trevor Moore's point totals in his production. And I mean, I see the Marlies play whatever, like 6 to 8 games a year. But if you're Kyle Dubas and you're there, like, watching him practice every day and you're, like, doing the development team and you're having meetings about him, and mm-hmm. like, he really knows what Trevor Moore is, and he believed he was an NHL player and looks like he was right.
Well, and he has a vision for the type of team and type of player that he wants, and, like, Trevor Moore fits that. And
Hobbits.
Well,
with heavy keisters.
Hobbits who have skill and speed.
and heavy keisters.
But so, like, what if you're the Oilers or if you're any of the other, these other rebuilding teams, it's like you need to know what you want to be, and then you need to stick to it. And, like, that even came up with Dubas after the deadline where he talked about Boston. He was asked about Boston. And he said, like, if you keep trying to change your team to fit a certain opponent, like, you start to lose your way. And so if you're not a team rebuilding, you need to know how you want to play, and you need to find players who fit that. And then you need to stick to it. You need to be patient how you develop them. The other thing with Shanahan that we haven't mentioned is he was really open to new ideas. And, like, he was willing to look at analytics. And he was willing to look at someone like Kyle Dubas, who is more forward-thinking, and be open to it. Like, you look at some of these other organizations, it doesn't seem like they've totally embraced what some of these things can do for them. And I think that's a mistake.
And I think that gap's going to widen here too. Like, as all the tracking data comes in, the teams that have invested in analytics are going to, like, be able to push even further ahead than the teams that are ignoring it. And, you know, as I was looking at the standings here, because Edmonton's here tomorrow, you know, they're in 26th. They got 59 points in 62 games. They're 7 points out of a playoff spot. I mean, the crazy thing with Edmonton too is that they didn't do anything at the deadline. They didn't sell. They didn't try and get picks. They didn't try and, like, improve their cap situation for next year. Like,
to be fair, what do they have to sell?
Well, like...
like, contract-wise.
But all you do, like, take... Get rid of bad money. Like, do whatever you can to set yourself up. Like, it's like they didn't do anything to try and prepare for what the future's going to look like.
Yeah, but to be fair, like, it's not like they have all these expiring contracts like the Leafs had where they could just sell them for picks. Like... getting rid of Milan Lucic is hard. Getting rid of Chris Russell is hard. I know,
but they got to do it, though. They got to...
how do you do it? Like, I don't think it's worth attaching... is it worth attaching, like... Jonathan Willis wrote about this. Is it worth attaching Puljujärvi to get rid of...
No,
Lucic?
No. But, like, maybe if it's a pick, or it's, like... maybe there's someone else on your roster, and their window is not going to fit with when you're going to be good. And
yeah,
you
but...
attach that player onto that.
But they're going to... they may as well just keep him. Like, they're going to be bad for the next few years anyway. What's the difference?
Well, doesn't Lucic has more than a few years left, right? And you can't buy it out, or...
what was it? It was a 7-year deal for six per? Good and this God. Must be, like, year two or three?
Like, three, I think. He should have played one season, and then they fired the GM. Like, how much more do you need to see after that? It's like...
yeah.
Like, teams should be a little bit more ruthless. Like, if you're the decision... like, most GMs now are making $2-3 million a year, and you're the head of an organization. You make a decision like that? Like, come on.
Well, and it was, like, clear-cut to just about everyone else at the time that that was a mistake. Well,
he had slowed way down in Boston. Like, they didn't want him there.
But, like, it's... you can blame it on Chiarelli, you can blame it on Nicholson. Like, that's got to be ownership saying, like... We're not good enough, and, like, we really need to build a
yeah, foundation. But you know what, though, Jonas, though? Like, the owner...
yeah, the no, owner it's don't there.
Understand...
for sure. You hire hockey people, they should do their job, and they didn't do it well, clearly.
Like, was it you showing me the video where someone went and talked to Melnick on the street about... yeah. Some news station tracked down Eugene Melnick in Ottawa, or was it in Toronto? I think it was in Ottawa. And was asking, why did you trade Mark Stone? And it's like, you got to go talk to the GM. Like, I'm a businessman who, like, you know.
Who's not very good at running a hockey team. What was the best part of that video is, it was like a...
he doesn't run a hockey team.
Well, he oversees, he owns it. The best part of that video is he was getting into a stretch limousine. I think it was like an SUV stretch limousine. And he was getting in the front seat, as you pointed out.
Well... I don't think things have been going very well for Eugene Melnick, so maybe he's driving his limousine at this point.
Okay, is there anything else about...
you laughed at that joke, even though I said that when we watched that video together.
Because it's still funny.
Oh, okay.
Better than your puns.
I can just keep reusing my material on the good listeners here. All 14 of them that are left. It's getting cold in my basement now.
Is there anything else, any other advice you want to give to the Oilers from what you've seen with the Leafs?
I think the fans should start turning on the team. Stop supporting them. I think that sends a powerful message.
What does that mean, though? People talk about that with...
well, I remember it happened in Vancouver. I remember when I lived there and they went through those disaster years with Keenan and Messier and all that crap. And there was a year there, I think it was 99, where the Canucks got like 13,000 fans a game. And that was like listed number, and it was actually worse than that. And that speaks to ownership, you know. And eventually they got things turned around. And I think part of it was they got the message. And Edmonton, you're going to see it. You're going to go out for that part of the trip. I'm going to go to Calgary and Vancouver. You're going to go to Edmonton. It's a beautiful building. Like, they did a great job with that. Now they just got to get the right team there that fans can be proud of.
Well, but the weird thing with, like, some of those markets, and I think Vancouver is a good example, fans there, it seems like, are very, just like they were here, they're very open to the fact that they would be okay if the team, like, took a step back and, like, got really young and collected good young players. Like, the thing that that I don't like that some media do, and, like, ownership and management, fans aren't dumb.
Well, they people did it here, right? Will Leafs fans tolerate a rebuild? It's like, of course they will. Like, if you have an intelligent plan, like, don't you remember the teams they had? Like, they had, you know, the Leafs, you know, you got, like, Frogren and Lebda and shit on your blue line, and it's like, you know, will Leafs fans tolerate that? They did. I mean, they tolerated those crappy teams, so...
Yeah.
Of course they're going to tolerate you going, having a plan and going getting good young players and trying to play exciting hockey and trying to do things new school way. And and I think that the fans in Edmonton would, quote unquote, tolerate it too if you went in with a plan. I mean, it might not work, you know. Like, it's not going to, not every team's going to turn it around. But I think if you get smart people and you collect as many good players as you can, it's sure as hell a better plan than what they're doing right now.
Yeah. Well, and don't sell, like, I think another mistake that they've made in Edmonton, A, they haven't drafted well at all. Like, they don't have anything, they haven't hit on, like, an Andreas Janssen. They just haven't done that well.
Remember that draft, and everyone said that Puljujarvi was going to go three, and then Columbus took Dubois, and he looks great. I mean, he's a star for them. And I remember people were saying that Columbus went kind of off the board and took him, and I think he got off to a slow start in his first season. I'm just looking at Puljujarvi. I'm just wondering what they could have done differently at that four pick. Who went right after him? Do you remember?
I don't.
I'm going to have it up here real soon. But, I mean, Puljujarvi still might turn into something. It feels like he's screwed.
He's 20, and they tried to rush it with him, and then, like, it backfired, well, which happens.
They're desperate, man. So, Levy, well, Matthew Tkachuk went two picks later, and, I mean, that was a pick that some people criticized, and he's been fantastic for Calgary.
Look at the next guy.
Clayton Keller.
Sergachev.
Well, look there, Alex
Neal. Charlie McAvoy.
Yeah, well, Charlie McAvoy's a good pick. Yeah. It's interesting, though, like some of these are not good picks. Like, you know, I heard that Mark Hunter liked this Michael McLeod guy, and the Leafs were talking to him, but, I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to be much of... The draft's a real interesting thing, and I think that what we're talking about with analytics, really sorting out the good teams from the bad, and I think that there's more and more of that that's going into the draft these days now, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have to, like, invest in all that stuff. Have an analytics team, embrace it, understand what it can do for your team. I'm not sure, like, that was always totally the case in the Lou Lamoriello years. There are obvious examples of that.
They did have an analytics team, at least.
They did have, right? And they found players. And, like, anyway, I think you'll have a good article on this by the time people are listening to this. Go to theathletic.com. Oh, man,
you're really talking it up. I haven't even started it yet.
Yeah, but, like, the ideas are marinating.
I'm going to listen back to this and just write out what you said. And
just write out some notes.
Yeah.
It'll be like, this was your lecture and you're taking notes on it. So we should mention the podcast is also brought to you by the Sockey Hall of Fame. Go to myfranchise.com. They have some cool, like, Leaf-related socks. They have a Joe Bowen sock. Wendell Clark, his stash looks amazing. Doug Gilmore, Johnny Bauer, and of course Mike Babcock.
Some fans right now don't want to wear Mike Babcock socks.
Yeah, there's like, so we got a lot of questions last week that we didn't actually get to, but a lot of, like, questions about Babcock and his usage and, like, his how he uses players, systems.
A lot of fans are frustrated. I think especially, like, kind of like some of the analytical fans are frustrated with, I think what's happened with Hall not getting a chance and Muzzin not playing on the top pair for very long and Marlowe being on the first line and Hyman playing 20 minutes a game and what else am I forgetting? Brown playing a lot and Lindholm on the third line.
There are fair gripes. They're still one of the best teams in the league. He will be judged, I think, and we can fairly judge him if the results don't come in the playoffs. And if the results don't come in the playoffs this year, and if the results don't come in the playoffs next year, he will be under heat, and fairly. And though all those things you mentioned are things that you and I have written extensively about, they are fair points to quibble with. But the point is, they're still one of the best teams in the league. And a lot of that, obviously, is like they've assembled all this talent that we've talked about. But he will be judged in the playoffs. And that, we're not there yet.
What we talked about off the top with kind of Hainsey being on the top pair or whatever, it'll be interesting to see if there's a turning point where Mike Babcock reaches where he moves away from that, because, mm-hmm. you know, he's got Janssen on the top line now.
We've seen that. We saw that, like, where on a dime, he just stopped playing Matt Martin. And then they brought up Kapanen, and then they brought up Janssen, they brought up Dermott, and they just changed. And then he never went back. So the final thing we're going to talk about is John Tavares going back to Long Island. There's obviously all this expectation that he's going to get booed. He will get booed. Do you have any general thoughts about, like, what to expect, or, like, whether this is crazy or...
I think it could be... My concern is it's going to be worse than people are... It's going to be more than booing. Like, I think people are going to be... It sounds like Islanders fans are talking about throwing jerseys on the ice and burning them in the parking lot. And I wouldn't surprise me at all if in that game there's, like, delays and, you know... I didn't realize Islanders fans were this... I don't know if passionate's the right word. It's like passionate mixed with crazy. I don't know what the... I don't know what the right term is, but... This feels like pretty unique. They seem to feel more spurned than most teams that lose a free agent player.
It feels more unique in hockey. This is not unique in basketball. This happened.
Granted, fan bases get this upset though.
Well, they got this upset when LeBron left Cleveland to bring it back home. When Chris Bosh left the Raptors, it was to this level, but fans are really pissed off at Chris Bosh. He came back here and he got booed. I think there were some cheers, but I'm pretty sure he got booed. Vince Carter was really bad because it was a different situation. The problem here is, like...
There's, like, this real nasty undercurrent to this one.
And the problem with that is it's kind of bullshit because it's not fair. It's like there's this world that fans are living in that it's like the guy is property of your team. He's a human just doing his job. And when he gets a chance to choose to play somewhere else or choose to work somewhere else... He took it, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Like, I think I'm fine with the fans being upset. I mean, you're fans, right? Like, it's your team, and if someone doesn't want to play for your team, you can take that as a slight. It's just, like, don't take it too far. Like, don't, right. you know, I don't
You know. Shouldn't be wishing ill on him, like, and right. hating him.
I don't think he's a bad person. I mean, do you think...
Obviously not. Like, this is, come on.
Like, do you think that he could have handled it differently, the way that it went down? I don't think that he really fully processed the optics of the whole thing. Like, the thing that the fans say they're upset about is that he kept saying, I'm going to be an Islander forever and I'm not going to go anywhere. And they felt like he was, like, lying to them for a long time. And then all of a sudden he just left at the last minute.
But we're human beings. We think things will be some way and then shit changes. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
It feels like what he was guilty of was, like, he was, like, almost too all in. Like, he just shouldn't have been so.
But maybe that's how he was feeling at the time. His mind changed. It's like, it's crazy. Like, a human being changes his mind and, like, maybe thinks something different. You're asking what he could have done differently? I guess the only thing he could have done differently is... I don't know, not tweeted a picture of him in Leaf pajamas, but, like, what's wrong with that? Like,
he's excited. He wasn't even wearing Leaf pajamas. Didn't you see Down Goes Brown wrote about this? He had bed sheets that had Leafs on them. Okay. Well, Down Goes Brown did a big column on it.
Okay, I got to go check that out.
I think it was one of our most popular pieces.
Okay, so the point is, even then, he's excited to go and play for the team that he grew up rooting for. He's from Toronto. Like, that's not a crime. He didn't go on national television and say... You know, screw, I'm not going to go back to Long Island. I'm coming home to Toronto. He didn't do anything like that. Like, I get fans being angry. I was mad when Vince left and how he left and all that stuff. But was I going to burn his jersey? No.
Vince was, like, kind of, like, openly, he, like, quit on the team, right?
He literally quit on the team.
Yeah.
Whereas Tavares played, like, his heart out, was their one of their only good players for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Was great in the playoffs. Wanted to win and just probably looked around and at what was going on with ownership and, like, the general manager.
He had some questions over whether it was going to be successful there, and he was being offered to join what looked like, I mean, the Islanders have had an amazing season, and, like, mm-hmm. full credit to everyone there, and, you know, it imagine if they play in the playoffs. I guess what I'm saying is, like, I don't it's fine if the fans are angry. I just hope they don't take it too far. I hope they don't, like, I don't know.
Be fair to the human being. Like, he's just a human just like everybody else. And, like, I don't know. I'm the opposite of you. I'm expecting this to be overhyped and he'll get booed and that'll be the end of it. I don't think it's going to be anything, but I could be wrong. And hopefully it's not.
This one just seems like they're angrier than I've seen before in the NHL.
You're basing that, though, also on social media where people talk tough. And not that they should act tough, but, like,
I just don't want them, like, throwing batteries at him on the ice or, like, something, like, I don't know. Don't do anything dumb, Islanders fans. Like, come on.
I don't think other fans are listening to this podcast.
No, but they might after they hear we talked about this.
Whatever.
We love you. Thank you for subscribing. Art Staple is a genius. It's interesting, you know, with The Athletic now, we have subscribers from, like, all these different fan bases. And if you, like, we can tag different stories with different teams. If you tag a story with, like, multiple teams, you get all the fans from the other team. That I don't know if we've done that with any of your stories. No. But, like, sometimes I'll, like, I wrote about when the Islanders and the Leafs played last time, I wrote about the Islanders and the Leafs and how there's, like, this weird rivalry that's come up. And we tagged it with both teams. And it's, like, then you get the fan bases are both, like, fighting in the comments. And
They should just be happy. They should be upset that he left. That's fine. They should also understand that he's a human being and that they have other good players and that they should just, I don't know. I understand.
They think he lied to them and is deceitful and always knew he was going to leave. But, like, none of that is actually true.
No.
It's not, like, everyone you talk to and everyone that knew him well kept saying, I remember, like, 3 or 4 days before he decided, everyone was like, I still think he's staying with the Islanders. Like, he loves it there. And, like,
You know what? Play it out. Let's say he actually wanted to lie. Should he have come out at the time and been like, you know what?
Panarin did it.
Right. Would you rather that be the situation? Like, clearly he really considered staying. And honestly, man,
he probably should have just been more vague about it, right? Like, he probably just said, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, then they would have given him shit for that. So you can't win. Yeah, but, like, and you know what? Not the fans, because the fans didn't do anything wrong. Based on how that organization operated during the time that he was there, they didn't deserve the benefit of the doubt. They didn't. Like, they were a shit show. They didn't develop. They didn't draft well. Generally, like, they didn't put good teams around him. He gave them 9 years, and they didn't do anything. Why would you stay?
It's going to be interesting to see. Like, their PDO is really high right now. Their save percentage is really high. It's going to be interesting to see if they got some really good prospects coming, like Wahlstrom and...
And good players now. Like, Barzal's, like, awesome.
He's fantastic, yeah. And he's a BC boy, so I will advocate for him any day. And it's good that they've had a good season. I mean, they've been one of the biggest surprises of the year. Like, Trotz is probably going to win Coach of the Year, and Lehner might be up for the Vezina, and who knows? Who knows what happens with the GM of the Year award, Jesus. Which is one of the most prestigious... trophies in all of professional sports.
Well, Sweet Lou is going to get, like, a real test of his GM medal when all those guys are UFA. Anders Lee is UFA. Brock Nelson's UFA. I forget who else is UFA. He'll be tested. Anyway, no more Islanders talk.
We had a lot of Oilers and a lot of Islanders talk here. It was some good stuff.
Okay. So we will be back, actually, next week. Is next week Western Canada trip?
Yeah, I'm going to be gone.
So we'll do a podcast when you get back the following week.
I'm going to the homeland. I'm going to see the dirt hills of Kamloops. I'll go see the pulp mill and the... Yep.
Good BC boy. And I'll be in Edmonton. So we'll come back with another podcast after that Edmonton game. When I'm back from Western Canada, James is back from Western Canada. Again, go to theathletic.com/leafreport. Get your discount. Sign up. And get your Bab socks or your Saki Hall of Fame socks. And is that it, James? That's it. I think that's it.
Oh, no, we got one. There's one final word here. He used to dance. He doesn't dance anymore.
Thanks for listening.